Force field is at 25% strength.
Booster ignition is go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi Podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital, or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token, or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side.
Auto sequence start in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Before we jump in, we'd like to thank our sponsors for making this episode possible.
There are several projects building inter-blockchain communication protocols, but there's one that's currently built. Cosmos.network is on a mission to link every blockchain. Well-known projects like Terra, Band, Kava, and Secret use Cosmos and the Cosmos Hub to connect to every other chain in their network. The Cosmos Hub is completed and launched, and you could visit cosmos.network today to check it out. The Cosmos Hub brings us that much closer to Web 3.0, and we thank the Cosmos community for sponsoring the Delphi Podcast.
Kava is a cross-chain DeFi platform that gives you the ability to earn more by connecting the world's largest cryptocurrencies, ecosystems, and financial applications in one safe and seamless integration. We're excited for the upcoming launch of the Swap Protocol, a cross-chain AMM liquidity hub bridging DeFi, blockchains, and financial services to swap the world's largest assets and maximize yields across your entire portfolio. Swap will join the Kava Protocol and HART Protocol as the next application built on the Kava platform. Celo is a mobile-first platform that makes financial dApps and crypto payments accessible to anyone with a mobile phone, providing the opportunity to positively impact the users of 6 billion smartphones in circulation today. Celo's eco-friendly proof-of-stake consensus mechanism and ultra-mobile light client makes up to 17,000 times faster than other blockchains and accessible to mobile phone users around the world. Visit Celo.org to learn more. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Delphi Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Shaughnessy. I help lead Delphi Ventures. I'm thrilled to have on Alan from Beta Finance. Alan, how's it going?
It's great. Thanks again for having me here today.
Yeah. So, Alan, tell us a bit about yourself, man. How'd you get into crypto?
Yeah. So, I actually got my first exposure to crypto kind of in like the fall of 2018. So, right after the ICO craze. And for some context, I did my undergrad at MIT and also my master's. So they actually offered their first decentralized systems class in the fall of 2018, and that was my first exposure. And I kind of took this class because it was like the founder of YC at the time, Robert Morris, was teaching it. And so I was like, oh, if this guy who's like super established in the tech industry is like interested in this space, then there's probably like something valid here. And so I kind of went into the class and built out the simple social dApp, which was kind of like a Twitter-like application that was built on top of Blockstack, so the Bitcoin blockchain. And it was a really cool experience, but I kind of like dived more into like the technical side, like reading a lot of like research papers rather than like doing a lot of like engineering work. And so that first like piqued my interest in blockchain and crypto, and I kind of like kept it in the back of my mind. But with the kind of like bear market and like climate we've been in for like the past 2 years before DeFi summer, I kind of diverted my attention to like AI a little bit more. And so I did a lot of really cool AI research around like the memorability of videos, published some papers, and then had some stints at both Facebook AI as well as Microsoft Research, where I continued to work on ML optimizations. But I've always had this like interest and awareness about what was happening in the blockchain and crypto space. Also because like my freshman roommate was working for the Ethereum Foundation. And so kind of when the DeFi summer rolled around, I had a lot of friends that were like interacting with all these different protocols, telling me about like all the opportunity that was happening in the space, like how there's been like so much innovation that was just kind of like really taking off during DeFi summer. And so that piqued my interest, and I kind of got back into the space, started like interacting with different protocols, Compound, Uniswap, Aave, et cetera, and executing trades myself. And I was like, wow, like DeFi has like come, has really like changed the blockchain space. Like it's not just like being focused on building these like social dApps. Like there's a lot of financial tooling and infrastructure that is really taking off right now. But as I was like interacting more and more with the protocols in the space, I realized that it was still very new. Like while there's still a lot of work that's been accomplished, there's still much, much, much more work to be done. And so kind of like around like October, November, when we were kind of in a mini bear market, I'd wanted to initiate some short positions. And so when I was trying to go about figuring out how to do this, I realized that I would need to interact with multiple protocols. So what this looks like is you say like borrow a token from Compound, swap this token through some DEX like Uniswap to an underlying token, then go onto this like spreadsheet or however you manage your positions and keep track of a bunch of different numbers. So like fluctuating borrow APY, fluctuating prices, et cetera. And it was like a very manual and complicated process that didn't have a lot of transparency. And so I actually ended up losing a lot of money because of how inefficient it was to manage these positions. And it got me thinking that like, wow, like there's something that could be done here. Like there's really a need for better tooling and infrastructure in DeFi in order to really give users accessibility to the tools that we need in order to create a more modern financial infrastructure on DeFi. And I think that shorting is especially important because it's one of the pieces of modern traditional financial infrastructure that is being used to offset volatility and price inflation and speculation. And that's something that I think is especially relevant in crypto today, where we have seen these kind of like pump and dump cycles for a lot of tokens.
Alan, so that's like- kind of... No, it's a killer intro, man. I have so many questions. I mean, before we get into shorting assets and beta and things like that, your experience is pretty wild. I mean, what was it like working on AI at, you know, where you were? I mean, the MIT course is incredible to kind of get you interested, but I mean, you're also coming from very large leading tech firms and you're coming into a space where, you know, you don't really have a large team. You don't have 50 people to work with. It's just you, man, and the community. So how do you grapple with like those differences and how was it working in those roles too?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up those points. Like I think working in AI is not that much like different from like working in crypto. There are a lot of like really interesting technical problems being solved. And the teams at these companies, like when I was at Facebook AI and Microsoft Research, are actually quite small because when you're doing research, you kind of like delve into like one topic like very deeply. And there's like a small group of maybe like three or four people that you work closely with the entire time. And you're kind of like isolated from kind of the large scale engineering work being done in the organization. And similar to how in crypto, like we see most of the teams in the space are very small as well. Like Uniswap had like six people when they were doing billions of dollars in volume, which is absolutely insane.
The feedback's got to be different though, right? I mean, like instead of, you know, sharing your work with a boss or a team, you're sharing your work now with the world.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the like most impactful things that I feel about crypto is that you're not really dealing with like bureaucracy or like having to like go through like multiple levels before approval. Like crypto is completely open. You just publish your code and everyone can start interacting with it. And it's really great to see how like you open source the code and you start to like grow a community around what you've built. And they start to like really take it upon themselves to lead and like promote the development, the further development of the protocol.
I'm totally with you there. And I mean, not to go too scientific with you, but, you know, not on a tangent, but I mean, everyone talks about generalized AI. They talk about iRobot, stuff like that. What's your take on where we actually are with AI versus what people kind of see now?
Yeah, I think like all these like ideas of like generalized AI robots, like people like robot delivery cars in the future, I think that's all going to happen. Like, a few years back, I also worked at a self-driving car company called Cruise, which actually launched like self-driving cars in Dubai recently. I think like the biggest blocker is just like high quality labeled data. And that's actually what I felt I like ended up spending most of my time on doing research at these companies. It's just like making sure that we have like high quality data in order to train the right models, because the like basic science and like techniques are pretty much there to accomplish like having very like knowledgeable AIs that are able to predict like complex tasks. It's just making sure that you get the right data and that it's labeled with high fidelity.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, no, I remember there was always like, there was always those programs like, I'm going to botch this, but I think CAPTCHA, like the CAPTCHA things were basically labeling pictures, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So let's go back and debate it before we talk about robots for too long. But you mentioned that shorting is a very obvious and existing thing in financial markets today. I think everybody's aware of that. It's kind of like a known fact, but it's very hard to do that in a decentralized way in crypto, especially for DeFi users. It does exist on some centralized platforms, but as you and I both know, there are blockers there. What are the most interesting use cases for people to short assets today? Is it just a hedge? Is it, you know, to hedge yield farming rewards, volatility? Why would people want to short assets for today in DeFi?
Yeah, so I think there are like a few different reasons. I think one of the biggest reasons is that you're really able to offset volatility by shorting. Because right now we kind of see this like up and only mentality where a lot of DeFi users don't really know how to take the opposite side of a trade. We see, for example, with a lot of like DeFi projects that have happened in these past months where there have been rapid pumps in the price. For example, there's like this virtuous cycle with like yield farming rewards where people have high yield APYs, which incentivizes them to buy the token or to earn even more APY, driving up the token price. And so we see this like massive inflation in the price in a short period of time, which is unsustainable and is just followed by a price crash like shortly. And it's often hard for the protocols or the tokens of these protocols to recover in price in the long term, because once something crashes so dramatically, like 99% in such a short period of time, it kind of removes the trust that DeFi users have in that project. And so if you're able to kind of like offset this volatility beforehand and allow people to counter this excessive speculation, leading to like a healthier long-term value accrual of the token, then it's better for like the overall health of DeFi and the long-term health of the project as well, because then they'll have like a more steady stream of adoption. Some other things that I think are really interesting are like, they're like being able to short opens up a lot of new hedging strategies that DeFi users can now take. So say, for example, you've like locked up your tokens on some like protocol and it's earning like 10, 15% interest. But because of this lockup, you can't like take out your tokens as immediately as you would like. Like say, for example, there's potentially a 7-day lockup. But the way with crypto, there could be like massive like price fluctuations that happen in a short period of time where you could potentially like want to take your profits. Like I know like Axie, for example, is going to the moon right now. And you could be able to go to Beta Finance and initiate a short position on the tokens that you've staked and just be able to like take profits earlier, hedging the risk of your staked tokens. And then you, when the staked tokens unlock, you can then repay with the underlying token, for example. Another thing is like delta neutral strategies, right? Like say you're like long on one position, but you want to be delta neutral overall. And so you are able to like open a short position to be delta neutral and just kind of like pocket the like either yield farming rewards or like spread or like, sorry, additional interest that you're earning on those positions.
Makes a lot of sense. Now there's a lot of reasons why someone would want to short. I mean, hedging yield farming, hedging volatility makes a lot of sense. It's really hard to do in DeFi today, if not somewhat impossible now for long tail assets. What's the focus of Beta though? Are you focused on Bitcoin, Ethereum, or are you focused on the long tail?
Yeah, so primarily right now, what we want to do is really enable accessibility to like all the tokens for people to short them. And the reason for this is because from my own personal experience, it's been a huge problem to just like identify like where can I find like a money market for the token that I want to short. Because right now you have to go through either like the developers or governance in order to like unbound a crypto asset. And so for example, like Compound only has 12 tokens that they support. But if you look at the actively traded pairs on Uniswap, there are like over 1,000. So this really means that like 99% of tokens are just unavailable to users. And we really want to make these long tail assets more accessible because they're also the assets that are like of short interest usually, that are more volatile, more like speculative, that really need this like counterbalancing force that we're providing, as well as like shorting provides like additional liquidity to that like pair as well. And so we see ourselves as like initially focusing more so on the long tail of assets rather than like shorting Bitcoin and Ethereum. But we do recognize that popular assets are extremely important to us, and we're not neglecting them at all either.
No, that's fair. I mean, one of the innovative things that you're doing is, I mean, at a high level, you're offering people the ability to short assets, which is very hard to do in DeFi to begin with. But the second differentiator for you guys is the focus on long tail assets, you know, new farms, new pools that pop up, which are important beyond kind of the large assets where people would want to hedge, you know, beyond that. I guess the question though is, there's a lot that goes into this, right? Like how do you, I guess let's start at the assets listed. Like how do you ensure that the long tail of assets actually gets listed on your platform? And then, you know, how do you do it in a way that's secure and doesn't risk beta blowing up?
Yeah, those are definitely good questions. And I think these are like the volatility and risk is like a big reason why we don't see these assets currently supported. And so we've thought about this like extensively. Like from day one, we've been building Beta Finance with like a short selling framework in mind and like a very secure framework in mind. And this has allowed us to make a lot of like technical product and design decisions that really enable us to deliver a secure and great experience to our users. So for example, creating a money market is completely permissionless and automatic. Like anyone can create a token, say, and from like Shiba token, Akita token, to like Axie, for example, if they just pass in the token address, they'll be able to create a money market on Beta and immediately start lending tokens, borrowing tokens, and shorting tokens. And the way we kind of like structure the risk around these new long tail asset money markets is that we have like a tiered risk model. And so what this means is that based off of how, what tier an asset is assigned from like S, A, B, C, D, all the way to F, there's no E level. it'll kind of determine the risk configuration. So what this means is like, the open loan to value ratio, the liquidation loan to value ratio, what the collateralization ratio is. And so for these long tail assets that are more risky, we have a more aggressive risk framework for them. So there will be like a lower LTV value for when an asset could potentially be liquidated. And so we kind of use this as a strategy in order to mitigate the risks. But the big part of why we're also able to ensure that users' funds are safe is that we use an isolated collateral model. And this is a big technical design decision that we made that essentially prevents your collateral from being liquidated if suddenly one of your positions becomes underwater. And what this isolated collateral means is like, say you have 100 ETH, right? And you have 80 ETH deposit on the platform, 10 ETH being used to initiate a short position on, say, Axies, and then 10 ETH being used to initiate a short position on Akita. And suddenly Akita spikes in price, right? If Akita spikes in price, only the 10 ETH associated with your Akita position is at risk of liquidation. Your other 90 ETH on the protocol is completely safe and not risk of liquidation. And so this is like a big factor for how we protect user funds.
No, that's interesting. I want to get into the isolated collateral model a bit more, but just going back to the automatic listing, I mean, I've seen a lot of projects come out and most talk about, you know, permissionless pool creation, permissionless listing, stuff like that. But in your, the way Beta works is you have a framework, depending on certain factors for an asset, it gets listed with certain collateralization ratios, loan to value, et cetera. Can you walk me through an example of, let's say the riskiest, newest, you know, most illiquid asset gets listed on Beta? What exactly would the parameters be if somebody wanted to go out and say short this?
Yeah, for sure. So let's walk through an example. Let's say that we've just opened a money market for like Shiba token, right? And this is assigned like a tier of F. And so right now the risk configuration is structured such that F tiers have a 32.5% open LTV ratio, which means that you can only like short or borrow up to 30.5% of the value of your collateral. And then if you are, if the loan to value ratio of your position goes up to 40%, then that's the liquidation loan to value ratio. And so at 40%, your position would be at risk of liquidation. And the reason why we kind of have a low liquidation value is to really prevent users from taking too speculative of a position so soon and like getting immediately liquidated. Because we also want to ensure that these positions are profitable for liquidators that are coming in and like making sure that positions are not underwater. And so we want to ensure that the collateral being used is always profitable for them to like repay the debt, such that we don't have like a scenario where the money markets become illiquid, people are just like not repaying their debts, and essentially like the collateral becomes worthless.
Got it. So I guess the other question for you though is just like from a user experience perspective, like the risky illiquid assets are generally the most volatile. So if like the, let's say the risky asset someone shorts starts to increase in price, and let's say it increases too fast, obviously they get liquidated, but is there any concern on this getting out of hand? Like what if it, you know, how does it get liquidated in time before I guess it becomes a risk to the collateral not covering it? Am I thinking about that the right way? Or
yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's exactly like why we have such a, like an aggressive LTV value for both like the open and LTV. I'm sorry, the open and liquidation loan to value ratios. It's to really ensure that like even in the case of these spikes, there's like still a sufficient buffer such that like the collateral will be like more valuable to repay for the liquidators to come in and repay with the underlying token, even though it has spiked in price. And one thing I also want to note is that another thing that we do to ensure this is we only really support stablecoins and ETH as collateral. And this is to mitigate like compounded risk from fluctuating prices of the collateral.
Got it. No, that's interesting. And I guess like who actually is the one liquidating people when it gets out of hand? Is this all programmatic based on smart contracts, or are there, you know, actors that come in here, whether it be bots or people that handle this?
Yeah, so it's going to be like a mixture of like bots, people, both like institutional traders, institutional crypto traders, as well as just like heavy DeFi users or your average like DeFi user as well. And so we'll have like a simple interface on the Beta Finance dApp that will basically show like the positions that are at that have like the highest LTV value and are closest sorted closest to like in descending order for like how risky, how close they are to like liquidation, such that you just like simply click a button if you're a normal user and you'll be able to execute the transaction to liquidate that position if it's underwater. But we do believe that probably like people will be creating bots to kind of manage these like liquidations and do them much more faster and much more efficiently.
That's pretty cool. And I mean, moving on to the isolated collateral model, I mean, that's the thing that I found most interesting with you guys, because you're siloing the risk per pair, right? So, you know, per collateral, per asset. I mean, other projects do this a bit differently. Like Fuse has an isolated pool design. Kashi has, you know, with Sushi has like isolated lending pairs. How do you differentiate versus those platforms? I know there's a lot to unpack here, but it would be interesting to kind of figure out, you know, what you guys do differently versus, you know, what's already out there, considering, you know, shorting in DeFi has been something people have wanted for a long time. So it's nice to kind of unpack these other solutions too.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Sushi's Kashi and Mari's Fuse with their isolated pools, both are trying to address this like problem of how do you kind of like manage the volatility of like long tail assets better? And so that you can onboard more of these like risky assets rather than just supporting more popular established mature assets. But the problem here is like with these like isolated models, they result in like a lot of fragmentation. So for example, with Sushi's Kashi, you have to say like there could be like a Deuce ETH pair or like an Axies ETH pair, but there could also be like an Axies USDC pair, like an Axies USDT pair, Axies USDT.
Alan, when you say pairs, like, so you're saying that for like there could be 10 pools for Axie, but all with different collaterals.
So yeah,
like ETH, USDC. Okay, got it. So yeah, that'd be
all with like a different collateral, and then yeah, it would result in like a lot of fragmentation. And each of these has like a different borrow APY, different lending APY. And so if you're like a lender on this protocol, you have to constantly move around your tokens in order to maximize your yield. And this is like a very similar problem we see with like Rari's Fuse as well, where there's a lot of overlap between what tokens are within each of these individual pools. Like, for example, USDC is in each of these pools, but the spread between the like lending APY can be like double digits between the different pools. And so again, lenders have to constantly move around their tokens in order to maximize their yield. Whereas like we have this isolated collateral model that kind of isolates the risk for users when interacting with like more volatile assets, but we don't have this fragmentation with the lending pools. So if you're a user coming into our platform and depositing your token, you know that you're immediately earning the maximum possible yield on your tokens without having to move them around ever.
Got it. And why is it hard for people to maximize their yield again on, say, Sushi or Fuse? Is it, I understand that you have a lot of, like, we'll take Axie, for example, like there could be five Axie pools where you deposit either ETH or USDC as collateral, and they're all their own pools. But why would the yields be different from those pools? Is it because people are, why do the yields vary within those pools?
Yeah, so there are different, so each of these pairs has its like own set of like Axie tokens that are isolated from each other in the pairs. And so this means that there's like a different amount of liquidity for each of these pairs, depending on how much people have deposited specifically for, say, like the Axie USDC pair. And because of this, that results in varying lending and APY and borrow APYs between these pairs. And since the lending APY differs, if you're trying to like maximize your yield, you have to constantly monitor like which is the most profitable pair at the time and be able to like transact and move your tokens effectively to that pair. But again, like things constantly change and fluctuate. So what might be the most popular pair right now is not necessarily the most profitable pair, say a week later.
Got it. So what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is on the lending side, so those that have assets to lend, their yield is fragmented because they're lending their assets to very different or multiple pools. And the interest they're earning from those pools for lending their assets varies because people are borrowing assets and paying interest, but they're posting all different forms of collateral, which is fragmenting the yield to the lenders. But on you guys, it's one asset per pool and you can post different forms of collateral. So there's no fragmentation on the yields to the lenders because they're all posting to one pool.
Exactly.
Got it. That's cool, man. No, it makes so much sense after you talk about it. But why do you think nobody's really done it this way? What's the bad side of this?
Yeah, so I think with like the isolated collateral model, you do kind of like limit people's like ability to like borrow as much and say like, for example, make it very easy for people to like cross-collateralize their position and leverage up on their tokens. And this is kind of like one of the trade-offs that we decided to make in order to really ensure the safety of our users' funds.
Nice, cool, man. No, it's. I'm just thinking through it. It makes so much sense. It goes back to original conversations. It's really cool. And then just talk about like the interest rate model. How do you figure out the interest rate model for each asset? Right? Is it the same for each asset? Does it go back to tiering? And can you kind of describe when the interest rate model kind of comes into play for each side?
Yeah, so the interest rate model is the same across like all money markets on the protocol. And we want to figure out like how we could create an interest rate model that would be able to scale with the number of assets that we're trying to support. And so we decided upon using a dynamic interest rate model. And so what this means is that we always try to like target a utilization rate range of 70 to 80%. So if the utilization rate is within this range of 70 to 80%, then the interest rate won't change. But depending on the deviation of the actual utilization rate at the current time from this range, as well as some like additional scaling factors we've incorporated, it'll dynamically adjust the interest rate. So like decreasing if the utilization is below the target range, or like increasing it if it's above the target range. And so that's kind of how we like try to incentivize users to always to like borrow and lend tokens such that we have like a like solid utilization of that lending pool at any given time. And then another interesting thing about this model is that we were trying to like figure out how we could really like make sure that tokens were like not overshorted. And so one of the things that we do is like if the utilization rate is over 80%, then we have a we have more aggressive approach to how we like increase the interest rate. So say if it's like a 95% utilization, then this interest rate could like quickly double and become like 200-300% APY and really like motivate people to repay their debts and close out their short positions. And so there's like a lot of interesting dynamics that we're probably going to see as the protocol gets deployed and used. And we're going to be like actively monitoring it and see how we can further like fine tune this model to give users the best experience because everything we're doing is pretty new right now.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you how crazy can the interest rate get? Does it technically go to like infinity or obviously not infinity? Like, is there, 1,000%, 10,000% cap here?
Yeah, we keep it at a 1,000% cap right now. And so the reason for this is because we think that if tokens are 1,000 is like a nice number, and if tokens are have like a 1,000% borrow APY, then it should be like a pretty significant amount of like interest that needs to be paid out to these lenders. And so this is also really beneficial for people who are long-term token holders and lending out their long-tail assets on our protocol. Because previously there wasn't really any way for them to earn additional yield on the tokens that they're holding. But now they can lend them out on beta and start earning additional interest in that token itself without having to like worry about moving their tokens around or like actively managing their positions.
That's really cool, man. So here, I'll sum it up for the listeners and let me know if I'm off here, but just to run through it, just so that everyone could understand what's going on. So with beta, anyone could lend any asset, like let's say Axie, to one large Axie pool. So there's not fragmented pools, not fragmented pairs. Borrowers, so if I want to borrow in short, I post collateral and say ETH, USDC, DAI, those main assets, and I could borrow or I could short. And then the amount depends on the tier. So that's automated through the framework you discussed, depending on how volatile and how liquid they are. And then Axie's listed because basically it's all permissionless. So was I all good there other than the Axie screw up?
No, everything's perfect. You explained it much better than I did.
No, it takes me a while, but after a while I get it. But no, it's a really cool model, man. So I guess just moving on, like just talking fun, like higher level stuff beyond the program, like how do you think about like the culture of shorting assets? Like, do you think that, like, I'm really hoping people use beta to like, genuinely and authentically kind of hedge positions. But do you think that this could like roll into a situation where people are, say, shorting assets and attacking them? Like, does beta become like a proxy for, how secure these networks are? Like, how do you think about that side of things?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of like misconception around like what shorting does. Like, everyone kind of sees shorting as like very evil, how they're like trying to make everyone poor and really like take good projects and just like kill them by like shorting. When this is like really not the case, like shorting is really a way for more efficient like price discovery, for example. It's really great for figuring out like what is the, like it helps like mitigate bubbles for these tokens as well, provides like greater liquidity, as well as like if there is like fraudulent activity going on for a token, then people are able to like reflect this in the market by shorting that assets and prevent like a like pump and crash where people would lose like much more money had like a shorts not come in and kind of reduce the volatility there. And so some of like the misconceptions for shorting that I really want to point out is that like when you short a token, it's not like these people are going to like kill the price. Like, it's going to only like decrease excessive speculation, but these people who are shorting the tokens have to buy back the tokens at some point later in time. And so this means that for every token shorted, that means another token needs to be bought eventually. And so this will drive more buying action in the future when there's like a more market efficient price and leading to a healthier long-term value accrual of the token. So if you're someone like me who's like mostly a long-term token holder rather than someone who's like trading all the time, I'm not worried about like the short-term volatility of this token. And what I really care about is that this token has like a healthier long-term value accrual rather than like the sudden pump and then crash in the span of like 2 days or 3 days where I'm not able to like liquidate or like get out of my position in time. And so I think it's actually really beneficial for people like me and other people who like really want to support projects in this space, because it'll ensure that they're able to like safely develop without having to worry too much about the volatility of their token.
Do you think it'll primarily be like a retail first UI UX model where, you know, people come on and use it? Or do you think this is more of a, let's integrate this into a Yearn vault, let's integrate this into, you know, XYZ DeFi project?
Yeah, I would say both. Like, we definitely want this to be retail friendly, which is one of the like driving factors of why I built it in the first place, to really make this kind of tooling accessible to any user in the space. But there are definitely a lot of like more complex strategies that you can build on top of this solution. And so like integrations with, for example, like Yearn, for example, like Alpha, who are incubated by, would be like really interesting to like pursue in the future. For example, like I know with like Yearn, we could kind of have like delta neutral strategies, for example. And so, yeah, what we're really building at Beta are kind of foundational Lego blocks in DeFi, starting with like this permissionless money market, as well as like the short selling tooling. And I think there's a lot of exciting stuff that we can build on top of it in the future.
That's awesome. No, I'm sure people way smarter than me are going crazy with what they can build from being able to short long tail assets, permissionally list them. Like, you could automate a lot of it. And one other question for you, how do you, like, let's say you have a risky asset, or let's just say a new asset, because risk is a deeper question, but something that's very volatile, liquid, stuff like that. How does it move up the tiers? Like, how does it eventually become an asset that, you know, which reflects on Beta that it's grown in size?
Yeah, so this is where like the community comes into play here. So the community is able to actively vote on whether or not the risk tier of a money market should be like upgraded or not. And so that's kind of how money markets on Beta will be able to move up their risk tiers.
Got it. No, that's cool. And, you know, we'd be remiss not to talk about it. I mean, you guys are part of Alpha Finance. You know, I got introduced to you through Tasha Napoon, so thank you to them. How has that experience been going? I mean, you're part of like, I guess, the Alpha ecosystem. And why? What's with the name Beta? Is that because of Alpha was first, or how'd that happen?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So I actually came up with this name because Beta is like a measure of volatility in traditional finance, and it's a common term that's being used. And since like our mission at Beta Finance is to offset crypto volatility, that's kind of why I chose the name Beta Finance, due to that relationship with the volatility. And then it kind of just like really worked out, I guess, like marketing wise, that Alpha is named Alpha and we're named Beta. So
no, it was
like a happy coincidence.
How is it like within, I guess, at a high level, like within their umbrella or within their ecosystem? I mean, obviously, you know, you're your own guy building your own project with your team, yeah. But how is it? Because like they bring a lot of resources, and full disclosure, you know, we're invested in Alpha and we're invested in you. I'm playing like the dumb noob to Beta for the podcast, but you know, just making those disclosures. But how has it been working under them? Because a lot of projects in the space, they're not started through incubators, right? They're started from individual people hacking. They don't get those resources. So how has that been going?
Yeah, I would say being part of the Alpha Launchpad Incubator Program has been an incredible experience. And I really think it's so great because it's a program that was started by founders for founders. So Alpha really understands like all the details and all the challenges that projects will encounter when they're trying to go from zero to one. And so previously, like because DeFi really like just took off this past summer, there hasn't been a lot of like expertise in the space. But now that these projects have become like more established, people are like really going out of their way in order to like pass on what they've learned to new projects that are coming on and being built, so that they're really able to like advance the space and not make the same mistakes that have been made previously. And what I really think is great about incubator program itself is that it offers like this great blend of both strategy and technical advising. So they're able to help the founders and team skills on both these fronts, no matter like what your starting point is. So from my own experience going through the process, I came in with like a more technical background, as I mentioned earlier, but now I feel like very comfortable in both like the strategy and technical side, and have really become a much more well-rounded founder than I was before. And it's also always great to just have like crazy smart advisors to bounce ideas off of and get really fast feedback from them. I think like personally, it's just like made all my work like 10 times more efficient because of this.
No, that's awesome, man. Yeah, no, I'm a sucker for a founder who's technical, but can also talk to keep it very TLDR, but it's hard to find founders who could do both, to be honest. I mean, it's two very different skill sets. So no, mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. And I guess, what are you thinking on, you know, just for your own, you know, value accrual down the line, how are you thinking about that at a high level?
Yeah. So the beta token itself will be able to like, you'll be able to stake this token on the platform for like voting rights and governance rights, for example, which will allow you to have a stake in what the direction of the protocol is going in terms of like the risk framework or like what collaterals we support on the protocol. But really cool as well is that you'll be able to collect a portion of all the protocol fees on the platform. So we have 20% of all borrow and short positions, the interest paid, 20% of the interest paid for all borrow and short positions will be distributed as protocol fees to beta token holders. And so these protocol fees, I want to mention, will also be like much greater than what we see on existing money markets because we have this like short selling functionality with the protocol. And what this really enables is like much higher volume that you would see more similar to like DEXs than money markets. And so this is like one way of how we are really bootstrapping a lot of value for holders of our token initially. But like my long-term vision for the project is like, just as like Uniswap is kind of the DEX for spot trading, I want Beta to become like the Uniswap for lending out assets, borrowing assets, and especially short selling assets.
That's awesome and makes sense. And one of my last questions for you, is there any interplay between Beta and Alpha Finance from a product standpoint? Like obviously Alpha has Alpha Lahore V2, leverage yield farms, whole nine yards there. Is there any interplay that you can see happening there?
Yeah, for sure. There are definitely a lot of like different strategies that we can implement, leveraging like Alpha Homora's yield farming products and Beta's like shorting products. I won't go into like too many details because these are like still under the wraps and might be like an alpha leak or something, but there will be like an integration coming up between Beta Finance and Alpha Finance that will leverage both our products together to enable greater financial tooling to DeFi users.
That's awesome, Alan. And I guess, what are you thinking on timeline for those listening? Like, what could people look forward to? How should they get involved? And what's next?
Yeah, great question. So we're actually going to be launching quite soon, this quarter, actually. We have a Q3 2021 launch target, which is right now. So maybe you'll see something in like a month or 2 months, actually. And I think the best way to kind of like stay updated on our progress is to follow like our social media. So we're on Twitter as @beta_finance. You can go to our website, which is betafinance.org, and follow all our socials there. We're post actively on Twitter, Medium. We have a Discord channel that we're growing out, as well as like a Telegram chat. So yeah, like, hope everyone is able to kind of take a look at the project and connect with us and support us as well.
That's awesome, Alan. No, I mean, we're thrilled to be investors in you guys. I mean, the isolated collateral model makes a lot of sense. I love the ability to short long tail assets to frankly hedge yield farming and volatility because markets get a little crazy. And it's something that definitely has to exist that really doesn't in DeFi today. So I commend you for that. And I think it's awesome that you have the power and the breadth of the Alpha ecosystem as well. So this is awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing the story with us.
Thanks, Tom. It was great being here.
Before we go, we'd like to thank our sponsors for making this episode possible.
There are several projects building inter-blockchain communication protocols, but there's one that's currently built. Cosmos.network is on a mission to link every blockchain. Well-known projects like Terra, Band, Kava, and Secret use Cosmos and the Cosmos Hub to connect to every other chain in their network. The Cosmos Hub is completed and launched, and you can visit cosmos.network today to check it out. The Cosmos Hub brings us that much closer to Web 3.0, and we thank the Cosmos community for sponsoring the Delphi podcast.
With a proven track record of delivering products safely, the Kava platform is DeFi's most trusted, scalable, and secure institutional-grade cross-chain engine. In addition to the protocols Kava and Hard, the Kava platform is launching Swap Protocol, a cross-chain AMM liquidity hub bridging DeFi, blockchains, and financial services to swap the world's largest assets and maximize yields across your entire portfolio. Try for yourself or learn more today by visiting kava.io. Celo is an open platform for mobile-first DeFi with a vision of bringing decentralized financial tools and services to anyone with a mobile phone. Eco-friendly, Ethereum-compatible, and governed by Celo holders, Celo's proof-of-stake consensus mechanism and automatic daily carbon offsets make Celo the world's first carbon-negative blockchain, offsetting over 2,200 tons of carbon to date. To learn more about how to lend, earn, and stake with Celo's growing family of platform-native stablecoins, visit Celo.org today. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.